We have Steve Meyer, who's the president of Paragon Economics, and he does a lot of work for the pork industry. Give you an economic update on everything.
Do I need to make a statement first or just take questions? I think we'll just take questions. A lot of you heard our presentation at noon yesterday. We'll be giving that same outlook presentation again at noon today on the second floor of the Varied Industries building. Elwin Taylor will be there to talk about weather. And as I said yesterday, after Elwin scared them to death with weather, I sounded pretty positive. So I'll just take questions here. Well, we got prices back to a profitable level here in the short run just the last few weeks. Some reductions in costs during the spring, and then this kind of belated but pretty good seasonal rally. I guess there were some cash hog bids at 98 yesterday in the Western Corn Belt, which is actually a little higher than what I thought we'd get after this spring. So some black ink finally for average hog producers here this summer. I think that probably that's not going to last, I don't believe, unless we have a very, very good corn crop, which looks a little bit doubtful at this point, or very doubtful. But I think we'll have losses again in the fourth quarter. I still think with a good corn crop, a corn crop that's still in the works now, you know, not trend yield by any stretch at this point, but with a good corn crop in the mid-140s or something like that on the national yield, we could have costs down in the low 80s by spring, by the first quarter. And if that's the case, we're set up for a profitable 2014. So we need one. We haven't had a profitable year for 2 years now. So, and some very sizable losses have put a lot of producers at a pretty questionable equity position going forward. We need a profitable year this year. Bruce. Well, the exchange rates between Canada and the United States haven't changed much. We've pretty well got a stable, pretty much par currency between the two countries, and so you're not throwing in the kind of pressure that we did when the Canadian currency was gaining value so rapidly a few years ago. And I think that's going to continue. It looks as though, the Canadian dollar is going to stay about par. That puts the Canadian industry at a bit of a disadvantage to the United States, I think, because in some places they've got higher costs. They have enjoyed actually a feed cost advantage some the last couple of years. I don't know if they will going forward. So, our biggest concern on the exchange rate front right now, and I think this would apply to Canada too, is the devaluation of the yen, which is a specific policy followed by the Japanese government and their central bank to try to stimulate their economy. And at some point, that has to really start hurting the buying power of Japanese consumers. And if that's the case, then our largest value market, and I believe the largest value market for Canada, well, outside of the United States, they're number two, aren't they? U.S. is number one for Canada. I believe the U.S. is number one and Japan is number two, but it's right there, and so that's a long-term concern that we have to keep an eye on. Beyond that, I think the exchange rate situation is pretty stable. Well, it's kind of always fun and games with the Russians. I mean, that's the way the world is with them. It's always been on and off. And as my friend Paul Aho, who's a poultry analyst, says, the chicken industry has decided that some customers just are so bad they're not worth having. And I don't think that's the case with Russia, but I think it's one of those situations where we kind of have to pencil them in at a very small number, and then if it gets larger than that, it's just kind of gravy. And that's the way they are. They've been that way for a long time. They were that way with the Brazilians when the Brazilians were their primary supplier. And so, there are some markets that are going to be risky from a political standpoint, and Russia's one of them. China has thrown up some roadblocks over ractopamine. the big thing there wasn't that they were preventing product from coming in. They created a lot of uncertainty with this certification demand on it and didn't define that very well, and it's still not defined very well, but it looks like we're kind of working with it. So, you know, there are some markets that are going to be that way, and the track record is what tells you the truth, and in my opinion, and, you know, places like Japan and have been very steady and gone by their agreements very well, and we know exactly how to play the game, and things go forward. Others tend to change the rules all the time. Theo. Well, I think they might. I mean, it all depends on A, how lucrative it is relative to what they have to, the price they have to pay to get it. And, you know, if you don't use ractopamine, you leave some money on the table. Those packing companies that are not as vertically integrated as Smithfield or Seaboard have a bigger challenge in meeting those kind of needs because they don't have the level of control over the production process. And, you know, if you don't have control over the production process, you have a very high level of trust if you're going to have the product tested at the other end when it gets to China. And so that's a bigger challenge for the non-integrated companies. Now, Cargill, in their situation, they raise a pretty good number of their pigs they have, but a lot of those go to independent producers to be grown as well. And so they don't have the degree of control that a vertically integrated company would have. So I think there's a challenge there. They're probably going to they've got to be assured that there's enough room for all of that product. And if Smithfield has 50% of their production in ractopamine-free, I don't know how much more market there is for ractopamine-free product, okay? So that's a judgment that they're going to have to make, and I think they'll have some challenges getting there. So they've got to be assured that they're going to recoup the money they leave on the table. And in the case of the non-vertically integrated, they're going to have to pay a producer $4 or $5 a head, whatever that's worth, or they're not going to bring them the product without ractopamine. Oh, gee. I can check that, Rod. It would have been... well, it had been last summer. We had some profitable prices last summer before costs started up. But I think it would probably been June or July of last year. But I can check it for sure, or when we're done here. It's on my chart. It's probably something I ought to know. Well, I don't think it's had a lot of impact on structure at this point. I mean, we haven't changed the sow herd very much. So it did cause some smaller operations, I believe, to go out pretty early last summer. We had a flush of sow slaughter in July, kind of when prices started up. Some folks that probably looked at this and said, well, shoot, if I can sell expensive, high-priced corn, we're going to get out of the hog business if they're not competitive or if they've got older buildings. I think we did lose some of those small ones. But not a lot. The strategies, I mean, there were a lot of strategies. The number one was find any kind of alternative feed ingredient you can. Of course, that's all those items are generally priced off of the value of corn, and so doesn't mean you saved a lot of money, but you're substituting other things. You know, we used DDGs to a great degree and synthetic amino acids and took soybean meal out completely out of diets in some cases for some periods of time. So there was a lot of diet reformulation. One strategy was get the pigs to market earlier than we did in August and September when we pulled weights down relative to the normal weights, 3 or 4 pounds. And that reduction in weights is even today. We're still running 2 pounds below a year ago and will for a few more weeks, I believe, before we kind of catch up with last year's weight pattern. So those are the major two. And in some cases, we reduced the sow herd. I mean, there were some operations that went out. I don't know of very many that cut back. You know, these modern units, you usually run them full or not, one of the two. Full or don't run them, one of the two. So it's kind of a 1-0 proposition. Yeah, yeah, I'm surprised. I never bought into the big reduction. This business doesn't change much anymore. It's pretty steady. I thought we could lose 2 or 3% of the sow herd. I really did when things went up to the degree they did. I was pretty surprised when we didn't lose any more than we did. Producers were in a little better financial position going into this than what I thought they were. I think a lot of them have done a lot better job of risk management on both the input and output side the last 3 or 4 years. They've just become much more active in pricing, locking in margins ahead of time. And so because of that, they didn't take quite as big of losses as what we thought they had and what my model that's based on cash buying and selling tells us they did. And so I was a bit surprised. I thought we'd lose 2 or 3% of the breeding herd. I never thought we'd lose 5 or 6. Elizabeth? Well, I think we already are. I mean, yes, I believe we will. I mean, if we've got 1% more breeding animals in the June hogs and pigs report, and I think that's likely. It's possible. I won't know if it's likely. But we'll have some expansion. We had 6/10 more sows in March than we did a year ago, percent. So if you've got a little bit of expansion there, we grow litter size by 1.5% every year. And because we've reduced weights over the last 9 months, like we have, we're going to probably get some weight growth if we have corn down in the fives. We're going to have weight increases. So you add those up, and having a 2.5% to 3.5% increase in production next year is not out of the question at all. Now, if you have a profitable 2014, yes, you're probably going to lay some more sows back. But again, this isn't a plus 5% business anymore. We don't do that. It's plus 2 or something, and then you have productivity growth on top of that. A 3% swing in this sow herd is a big deal anymore. Matter of fact, it's been a long time since we had a 3% swing year over year in the sow herd, one way or the other. Sorry.
Can you snapshot for us what Ellen had to say about the weather forecast?
Oh, geez. That's not real easy to do. Did you tape it yesterday?
Yes.
You're going doing it today. Ned's going to record it so you can listen to it. So, okay. Well, and Elwin talked about one of the things Elwin came back to was the very close similarity of this year so far in 1947. And his parting shot on that was pretty scary because in 1947, after July, it quit raining. And so, when he did that, I said when I got up that after that, anything I'm going to say is going to sound like good news. So, this year? We're not going to run out of corn. You may not want to buy it in August, but we won't run out of corn. The market will make sure we don't. But it's going. There'll be places you can't find corn. I really believe that, and I've said it for a long time. And there's going to be some basis situations in some places that are going to be really outlandish. And we are already seeing some dollar over basis offers for July delivery, and we've seen 80 cents over for 6 months in some places in Iowa. So. I think the corn situation between now and the end of August is going to get very tight, and we're not going to have any harvest of the 2013 crop early like we did a year ago because of this delay we've had in planting. So last year's crop year was short because of early harvest. This year's crop year is going to be long because of early harvest last year and late harvest this year. So we're not going to get any help on this thing between now and the end of August. The soybean situation is probably going to be tighter than the corn situation. There are a number of crushing plants that have already closed, and there's going to be some others take break when they get into July. They normally do that for maintenance and stuff, but it's happening earlier this year, and it's going to be longer. I know of some producers that have soybeans and have made a deal with the crusher that they'll bring them the beans to they'll sell them the beans to crush as long as they get to buy the soybean meal back. Yes. The ones that haven't listened. I mean, well, it might, but you're not going to have any wheat either. So, you know, so as the, you still got snow on the, no, not, it's not that bad, but it's close. Yeah, I mean, so I don't know that you're going to be in much better shape than we are. And the other thing that's playing into ours is the soft red winter wheat crop is going to be pretty good in the east, but the hard red winter wheat crop in the west is going to be not very good at all. So that hurts, too, because you'd have a July harvest there that could help you a little bit. No, well, in the east, you're probably going to be able to some degree, yeah. And that's happened before. It happened a couple of years ago, and they used quite a bit of wheat in that part of the world.
Smithfield, do you surmise it's production or technology that goes to China first, or a combination that starts with technology and ships it over? What's the time frame?
Well, production will go first because that's the easiest one to go. I mean, we can just start shipping product. When I say production, I mean output, meat. So I think that's going to be the first thing. I don't know, and I don't know that the Chinese buyers are getting access to technology in the terms of equipment and those kinds of things that they don't already have. I mean, if you walked around this trade show, you'd have access to all the equipment in the world to raise a pig. And I think you probably get that at a trade show, the AMI, or somebody that has the packer equipment people there. So I don't know if you get access to things that you don't already have. What they do get access to, though, is a company that knows how to put all that together and the know-how and the to do that. And I think they're going to come here and try to learn that so they can take it back to China. I think this underscores probably the perceived need for food safety issues in China, too. And they probably see this as an opportunity to kind of up the ante on food safety issues, given all the challenges that there's been there, and I think the problems that it's really causing with consumers now, you know. So the know-how, I believe, is what they're really tapping into in the long term there. And how much will that help them? Well, it'll help them some for sure, but this is still a country of 1.3 billion people that really like pork, that really doesn't grow grain very well, that doesn't have much space to do all this in. And so I still think they're going to be importing pork in the future to a great degree.
Will Smithfield have easier access to the Chinese market as a result of this, or will some of those restrictions still stand?
Well, I think some of the restrictions still stand, but I think having a partner within the country has to help. And the other thing is you are, it also gives you a direct link to the processing and distribution systems that Henan Shuanghui has there. So I can't believe it doesn't help, Bruce. I guess I don't have firsthand knowledge, but that has to be a driver of this thing. Now, they're going to have to deal still with ractopamine and those kind of things at this time. But it also gives them an in-country advocate that has to be a long-term help. I mean, if they have any stick at all in dealing with the government there. So on that count, I think it's a positive, and it might be a positive for everyone if that's the case.
Does Canada win the next M-Cool WTO challenge? Should they, and how does that affect?
Well, number one is Canada doesn't have a say in the next one. The next one is just the WTO looking at our proposed and now final rule and saying, does this meet muster of meeting the objections that the appellate panel first found as far as our MCOOL program. So and after that decision comes down, then I think Canada and Mexico can possibly weigh in again if it goes against them. But I would be really surprised if WTO says that our new rule solves the problem, because I think it makes it worse, personally. So if that's the case, then Canada and Mexico won't have anything to appeal, and they can move forward in putting retaliatory tariffs in place if we don't get something done. So, and I think that's what will play out. We'll know in about 65, 70 days, I guess. WTO's got 90 days to get back to us after, so that would be May, June, July, August 23rd, somewhere around the 20th of August. Still, even if it goes against us and we don't do anything, it's probably going to be sometime next year before we see any tariffs applied. And we don't know what they're going to be applied on for sure. Logic says that it might be beef or pork, and I point out every time I'm in Canada, I try to tell them that most of us were on your side. So, there's always risk of that. I mean, but it would be an outside force that causes it. We're not going to have supplies relative to packing or demand under normal circumstances that would be that high, okay? But you find a case of foot and mouth disease in the United States, and there you're going to have a meltdown in hog prices, all right? And it's going to happen pretty dang gum fast. So there's always a risk of that. The risk is pretty small. And we did one thing that the high prices of the last year did was it pushed down the road any challenges we have with packing capacity. A year ago, we were into an expansion that I thought would bring us enough pigs this fall to maybe be an issue with the number of packing capacity spots we had, okay? The lack of expansion in the last year has pushed that down the road. We do have a slightly larger capacity this year than we did a year ago, just some tweaks and changes on a few plants. There's nothing new built. But that plus no expansion, we shouldn't have a problem with packing capacity this fall. You put 2.5% more pigs a year from now if you have any expansion here, and that's going to be really tight. So there is a point at this point where the packing capacity in the United States becomes a limiting factor to this industry. And we need another plant a year down the road, 2 years down the road. And the problem is you start today and you won't slaughter a pig for 2 years. I mean, it takes a long time to even expand one or certainly to build a new one. There's still only one company that has any plans of building a new one. They have not moved on that yet. That'd be Triumph in their East Moline situation. There's some question about whether the site they have there is still appropriate. There's two or three plants that could be double shifted. There's no set plans to do that. They're all in the West. They would all be pretty dependent on an M-Cool decision and what it does for Canadian pigs coming down. And so they're not going to do anything until that's all settled. So we do need a plant, and we'll need one within the next 3 years if this industry is going to grow. And let's paint the scenario that Smithfield begins selling a significant amount of their production to China, and that would short the U.S. market and send market signals to raise more pigs. But if we can't kill them, we can't raise them. And so, all of this, will the timing work on this is an issue, and I think it's something we better be careful about. But I don't think we're going to run into that real problem for another year now.